This week, we're descending into the minds of madness as we look at who is the greatest horror director of all time. Yes, all your favorite morbid minions and monsters from the minds of two great masters of horror. Damn it, that does not work. Anyway, let's get spooky. This is 24 frames per second. Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of 24 Frames Per Second. I am your host, Kwesi Phillips, and today we're going to start a little bit differently because we are recording on Indigenous Peoples Day, and if you're a fan of the show, you know that we do a land acknowledgement for all of the Party Fish Media work that we do in Seattle, and we acknowledge that we are on the unceded ancestral lands of the Duwamish people, a people that are still here continuing to honor and bring light to their ancestral heritage. And we don't want to undercut our message today with just this acknowledgement, because there's so much more that we can do as allies, beginning with recognizing that we as people are beneficiaries of the violence and appropriation that made it possible for us to be here. And the simplest actions we can take to act in solidarity is to understand what land we live on, think about how we benefit from that land every day, and think about all people have lost in order for us to benefit. And we need to use that as action through our continued learning, activism, volunteering, and providing resources to these Indigenous communities. Real Rent Duwamish is one of those many organizations providing social, educational, health, and cultural services, such as the Duwamish Longhouse and Cultural Center, which is a free museum, event space, and community center. If you'd like to know more about what you can do, how you can help, you can please visit realrentduwamish.org. That's realrentduwamish.org. You can find out more. Welcome everybody. This week it's time for another Flame Off. We're going to try and find the movies and directors that take the top spot in a new category each episode. Today we've got a great showdown to talk about who are the true masters of horror. Are these the directors you thought? Maybe, maybe not. But our panelists here this week are ready for the spooks, showdown, and find out who are the manic minds that are the best horror directors. Chris, I've done enough talking. We're going to jump you right in. What's up? How you doing?
Good, Casey. How are you?
I am doing great. We are recording this the day after the 24-hour horror movie marathon that we do every year for the podcast. And Chris and one of our guests were able to come. And I know all of our guests would have been there if they could, but it was really fun, and you were able to come through.
It was awesome. A good time. I didn't make it through all 24 hours. I had some other responsibilities, but it was the first time I was able to free up some time to come, and I'm super glad I did because horror is not actually something. It's not my go-to. I don't dislike it. I don't run from it, but it's not like the first thing on my list. So it was really, it's always good for me to be exposed to stuff that like other people have like, you know, curated and like brought to the fore. So I was really jazzed to like enjoy all those movies with screaming people.
Yeah. It's always the best. You can't, I'll say this 1,000 times. Horror movies are roller coasters. It's not fun to go alone. As much fun for me to go alone. Let me clarify. Sharing the experience with people is what makes it really awesome. And, you know, so it was great that you were able to come through. Did you have a favorite for the ones you watched?
Oh my gosh.
No, I love it.
No, all great. I don't think I did. Like,
all
hits. There were some I enjoyed more than others.
Yeah.
But like, I thought Trick or Treat might have been my favorite.
It was a good one.
Of the ones we saw. Because it was just fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like way less, you kind of think about like the, you know, what potentially is kind of going on with like, it feels like that was a really interesting way of weaving these stories in between each other.
It was clearly someone who really liked horror tropes and wanted to play with them and wanted to create something out of that like, it's all elements that you've kind of seen before, but they did something cool and new with it. And I hadn't seen it before. And I thought that was really, really cool. In terms of like the style and tone, I thought Terrified was pretty rad.
Ooh, baby.
And, Yeah, that was pretty spooky and much more of like of a slower burn.
Oh, for sure.
But that's one of the things that like the horror marathon, if you follow us on social or whatever, and you can like kind of curate your own list from it, y'all do a really good job of picking films that are like some of them are kind of fan favorites and some are things I've never heard of, and it kind of spreads the gamut of like the type of horror, the like the country of origin. We had a bunch of different languages, and it exposes you to a lot of different types of horror in a genre that I think sometimes gets pegged as being kind of narrow
Absolutely.
or frivolous.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And we'll dive more into the post show, of course. And if you're listening and you want to see what we watched, we've posted all over social media our lists and you can check it out, as well as the other years we've done these marathons for 24 hours. So, but yeah, I totally agree. I love that we have that space. Like, we try and do that to spread out because, I mean, Korea and Australia are becoming these, like, these core areas where new horror visions are coming and like really setting the tone worldwide, which is really, really fun to watch. So it was great for us to, add that. And yeah, I totally agree. I think that it though Terrified is also very good. I thought that was a really, really good one.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely talk more about it. But we gotta, we have a championship
We
to
have stuff
determine
to do
today.
here.
We have work to do. This is not just fun and
No.
games for this amount of time. So let's jump right into it, shall we? Let's introduce our amazing panelists this week. We've got you've seen her on the show many times, Miss Casey Rom. Casey, how you doing?
Hello, I'm doing good. I'm a little nervous to not wield power this time.
Now you know what it feels like in the hot seat. You were also to come be able to come through. It was great to see you.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And you did you have a favorite? Did you have one that you
Ooh, I think I also really loved Terrified, and then I think my second favorite, just because of the like experience of watching it in the group, was Gone Jim Haunted Asylum.
Yeah,
It was just
absolutely.
like everyone was just on pins and needles because we did those two in a row, and so it was just like,
Yeah.
just lots of scares, and we had the Korean sheet mask moment where we all needed a moment of
That's
self-care,
right.
and I really
That's
liked
right. We did.
that
We had to take care of ourselves somehow. You got to
too.
give yourselves a hug in some way.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure. That was a great experience. Well, it's great to see you and have you on the episode. And your opponent across the city from you is Katie Bennett. What is up?
Hello, hello. How's it going?
You were sorely missed as another fellow Scream
Know.
Queen of the 24 Flames universe.
I know. I missed you all. I would love.
Yeah.
I'll eventually make it out to one of these.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, that's why we post them, We got the full list to make your own if you want. And we can also just hang out and watch movies together. We don't have to wait a year. Although for me, it's how I watch horror movies. I can't watch it alone, so I have to wait
That's
for everyone to
fair.
be ready to watch it with me. But you're a connoisseur, so old hat.
I try. Yeah, it is like a, this is a Tuesday evening watch for me most of
Woo!
the time. But I appreciate going all in on the 24-hour marathon.
Yeah.
That is a lot of horror to consume in one day.
Katie just has ice water in her veins. Nothing phased.
That's
That's
well,
amazing.
you say that. I'm actually a huge scaredy cat, probably due to the many years of me watching things like that on a Tuesday afternoon for no occasion.
There you go.
She's just really bad at self-care.
Exactly. I just
You gotta
prefer to
have
be,
aftercare.
I prefer a level of anxiety that I can't dip below, or my brain will just lose it.
You gotta always be at a certain,
Yeah, ever
heart rate.
vigilant. Yeah.
Well, great. Well, thank you for coming. And you guys both have we're doing a little differently this time. We're not doing movies, we're doing people. We're doing the directors who make these movies come to life and these horrible visions come true. And you both have some excellent candidates. We were talking a little bit before the show about for me at least, doing some research, just realizing how many people there are that are responsible kind of for like creating some of like the common horror things that we think about on a regular basis, or like what the way we think about horror. And you both have amazing people that you're bringing to the show to talk about. So why don't we start with Casey? Casey, who did you bring? Why are they the greatest horror director of our time, of all time?
Yeah. I will say that, you know, this name popped into my head immediately when I read the title of the episode, and so I stuck with it. But I am sure in the post show we will talk about many, many honorable mentions that neither Katie or I was able to discuss today. But my go-to is Wes Craven, dearly departed director of such classics as the Scream franchise, up through four at least, Nightmare on Elm Street, People Under the Stairs, Last House on the Left. There's a bunch in there. If you watched a remake in the mid 2000s, it was probably a remake of a much better Wes Craven film.
I love it. And like, what would you, if you were to choose from his collection, kind of like the standout, what would you say is his shining light?
Yeah, I think there's two really strong contenders. Because of the era that I grew up in, I went with Scream for this one, but I think you could have just as easily talked about Nightmare on Elm Street for a long time. So I'm happy with my choice because it's more tied to the era that got me into horror.
Yeah, that's your favorite for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the one that establishes horror for you. So I can see that. Awesome. And Katie, who'd you bring to the table? Who's your pick for the greatest horror director?
I am here to talk about the one and only James Wan. I'm a huge fan of his and have been for a very long time. I think, weirdly enough, even though, you know, we're going to get into kind of some of his movies and franchises he's worked on, and pretty much everybody has heard of the movies he's worked on, but I feel like his name, for some reason, gets left off a lot of, like, best of horror directors lists, or, like, people just, I don't know, for some reason, he feels like he's flown under the radar in some ways. So, I think he is one of, if not the best, one of the best horror directors of all time, particularly of the modern era, because he is responsible for launching three of the most popular and highest grossing horror franchises of all time, that being Saw, Insidious, and The Conjuring Universe. The Conjuring Universe is actually the highest grossing horror franchise of all time. But obviously it's not just about money. It's not about, you know, just what puts butts in seats. I think, you know, as a director, he is also just very talented, has a very unique style. Like, I know it's a James Wan movie when I'm watching it. Like, we'll kind of get into some of the details of that later, but I think he has a kind of all around genres director sensibility of things, like when it comes to like action and humor. But then he's really good at just keying in on absolute terror and kind of forcing you to look at something so scary that you want to look away, but you can't. And that's what I love about him.
Yeah, and I think he also is kind of a part of this. You know, he's a Malaysian born, but he's from Australia. Mm-hmm. You know, he has, that's part of like what I was saying about like kind of the international influence into like what horror is, and bringing those, the ideas of horror from different parts of the world into like the American mainstream, and like adding that extra level of flavor to it for sure. Yeah, awesome. Well, you know what? This is great because we've kind of pointed on a couple of things that I want to talk about, but let's kind of just talk about like style. I think that that's kind of one thing that, you know, when you think about the way that horror movies spark, you know, delight and fear in the audiences, it's how you draw them in, how you use the tools of the trade in order to make these movies impactful. And each of these guys have a very different way of doing that with their, I mean, especially during their time periods of when they were the most influential during the 2010s or during the 90s. But like, what is it about each of your directors kind of style that pinpoints them as, you know, as like kind of iconic or in a way, or like where do you kind of see it the most? Like, where do you kind of see it the most excellent or, you know, exemplified?
I am happy to start with this one because I think that Scream is one of those movies like The Blair Witch Project or Paranormal Activity where you can't talk about the movie without talking about before the movie when it was a trailer and it was marketing. And it was marketed as a Drew Barrymore vehicle of the slasher genre that we already knew and loved, you know, the director of Nightmare on Elm Street, yada yada. She's front and center on the cover, she's front and center in the trailer. And then, much like, you know, Psycho before, she gets killed in the opening sequence, and you realize that this movie is not going to be what you thought it was. And so, yeah, so it's marketed to horror movie lovers in a way where, you know, they see that trailer and they think, yeah, I'm going to enjoy this. And then once they get there, it's subverted and they realize that there's so much more to it. That initial phone call, you know, do you like scary movies? Like, yeah, we do. And we want to hear more. And then it ends up being this kind of, you know, meta, recognize the tropes in order to save yourself. And he was really one of the first to do that. And he actually did it before Scream, with Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which is technically a Nightmare on Elm Street sequel, but also kind of a documentary about the production of The Nightmare on Elm Street. It's fascinating and really worth a watch. But I think Scream is where people started to really sit up and pay attention. And I think it's notable that, you know, he had Scream hits in three different decades, in the 90s, in the 2000s, and in the 2010s with Scream 4. And so he managed to keep that franchise alive. And also, I think a lot of people consider Scream 4 to be a launch of even a new era. And so he just really pulled it off. Like, he really understood where horror was going and helped guide, you know, other directors there by launching these epic movies.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, kind of to go off of that, you know, I feel like James Wan has also done that in a lot of ways, but maybe for like the next generation, you know, kind of, he's kind of like the one that comes after Wes Craven here. Like, I feel like as far as his style goes, I mean, I guess first I'd like to just quickly touch on Saw, because you mentioned kind of, you know, changing the landscape of the genre. And I view Saw in 2004 as like a landmark moment of like, things are shifting, that it showed this really weird, gritty, dark, violent turn in the genre, which I think, you know, people weren't really using the phrase torture porn until, at least not regularly out in your day-to-day
life. Not in public life, you know, the same way.
Wasn't, you know, that kind of didn't come around until movies like Saw started really coming out, like those really like gritty, you know, gnarly kind of violent movies. But interestingly enough, I feel like he didn't really come into what I consider kind of the James Wan style until a couple of movies later. Like, you know, after Saw, he did Dead Silence, which you can kind of start to see some of his style creeping in, but it really was, he really hit that stride with Insidious in 2010 and The Conjuring in 2013. Like, I feel like his style kind of with those movies and all of kind of the sequels and side movies that have spawned from that, it's really sleek. It's really like kind of glossy, like high quality. It's not gritty at all. Really smooth camera work. Especially like, I love the way, and I mean, I want to credit, you know, his cinematographers that he hires as well, but I feel like this is a collaboration with the director, because the director ultimately has kind of the vision here. A lot of slow zooms, sometimes fast zooms too. Like, I kind of mentioned this earlier in my first kind of bit, like, he's basically like forcing you, it's like he's pushing you to look towards the scary thing and making you look at it, and you don't want to look away, but you can't look away.
For sure.
And you know, there's a couple of moments I've noticed in movies where you know, instead of kind of your average kind of generic jump scare, which, you know, he kind of does the classic jump scares a lot in some of his movies, but sometimes his jump scares will be like person that you see coming towards you, but is like yelling and getting closer to your face, and it's not kind of like your classic jump scare. So I feel like that's like a unique kind of twist on it. And so yeah, I feel like, yeah, stylistically, I feel like a lot of movies that came after Insidious and The Conjuring definitely had like hallmarks of those movies like embedded into them. I really think he influenced a lot of a lot of filmmakers that we're kind of seeing come into the spotlight now in, you know, 2022.
God, yeah. I'm just, even as you guys were talking, I'm just thinking about these, in both of these directors' canon, just like iconic visual horror moments, mm-hmm. or not even just visual, but like just moments in their movies where I just will always remember. And I think that that's kind of like a staple of why these two are both kind of so much in the conversation of this, of kind of who really is kind of shaping the genre of horror. Because like the movie moments like that are hard to pull off, and also hard to make sure that they matter as much in the movie versus just like a trailer pull or something like that, right? And I think that both of these directors are able to kind of find those moments in their stories to kind of bring, like you were saying, Kate, like to make you focus and not let you kind of stay away and like kind of build the horror that way.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And like I feel like I think you know, Wes Craven has some similarities with this next bit as well, but like I really just think James Wan, he has also got a really good like business eye, I guess. He's really good at like creating, like world building and creating these franchises, like,
yeah.
Like the fact that like Saw ended up having like 10 movies, which he produced all of them. He only directed the first one, but he had a hand kind of in all of them. I, you know, the same thing with, you know, The Conjuring and Insidious, just like coming, like creating specifically with The Conjuring, like finding the characters of Ed and Lorraine Warren, who were a real life ghost demonologist, which that's a whole rant I will get into in the post show about those people. Okay, but regardless, like they're great fodder for this like supernatural universe because they have all these case files, they have a haunted museum in their home with all these haunted items. So it's like he just latched onto this great jumping off point where you could just grab any item or case file from their like repertoire and make a really cool creepy horror movie about it. So I just, yeah. I appreciate his eye for launching franchises.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like having a movie that's kind of like a staple is one thing, and then being able to create something that could evolve in its own world is definitely another skill for sure. I think that like what's interesting about Wes, like I've heard, I don't know if this is true, like the stories around Wes Craven, like the difficulties of making sequels for him, mm-hmm. of like whether he wanted to, like he's like more of like, we have this awesome this story that's going to be told in this moment, and it kind of exists as this, and whether or not, like especially with the end of in Nightmare on Elm Street, where you're kind of left in ambiguity, mm-hmm. that's another, well, not really, it's kind of pretty clear what happens, but you know what I mean, like it doesn't end the way you're expecting it, and that kind of creates the questions that you ask yourself after the movie's over.
And I think you have to give it up for, you know, creating these iconic characters. Like when you think about horror villains, you think of Michael, Jason, Freddy, and Ghostface. Like he's got two of them, so it's pretty crazy to think that,
yeah, sure.
he ever thought that he would launch a franchise with Freddy Krueger, because that I think is one of the scariest, just purely based on the plot, one of the scariest concepts. And then the fact that the movie is also good and terrifying just elevates it. But like he kills you in your dreams and you're afraid to go to sleep. Like how much more basic can you get? We only have so many needs as humans, and one of them is to sleep,
and to ruin one of those.
Yeah. Something that a lot of people associate with like relaxation and safety and calm. And so, yeah, I think that just that alone is so genius. And then to come in and bring Ghostface into our lives, which is, you know, famously different people don the Ghostface mantle for the various projects, and then you have people having this extra layer of like, who is it? And it's almost like a mystery slasher.
It's like commentary. Horror James Bond.
Yeah, it has these, and it's really fun. You know, Scream 5, which was not a Wes Craven directed because he did pass away before it came out. Part of the fun was figuring out who Ghostface was. And I just don't think you can beat the original Scream reveal of Ghostface. I think that it was so shocking and so awesome and unexpected. And, you know, there's multiple red herrings and then reverse red herrings. It's so, so fun. And that ending sequence, which is another one of his staples, kind of the villain gets to tell their tale, is just so iconic to me.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, sorry, go for it.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, kind of jumping off of that, you know, like, speaking of iconic characters, you know, James Wan definitely has his fair share of iconic characters, you know, Jigsaw, of course, and not just Jigsaw the man, but the creepy little puppet on the tricycle that he kind of uses as his avatar, you know, that it, you know, it's just so iconic. Even if you haven't seen the Saw movies, like, you just, you know. And, you know, it's the same thing with, like, I don't know, it's the same thing in some ways with, you know, like, the red demon from Insidious. Like, I mean, people who haven't even watched that movie, like, probably know about that, the famous, you know, jump scare where the demon appears behind Patrick Wilson in a scene in broad daylight that normally would just be a bunch of exposition where it's just three characters talking, and then all of a sudden there's just a demon behind Patrick Wilson. So that is just, like, hugely iconic to me. And while I don't think it's had enough time quite yet to, like, marinate and truly become iconic, I'm going to say, mark my words, in 5 years' time, Gabriel from Malignant is going to be one of the most iconic horror villains of all time. He already, already in my weird, like, circle of horror film Twitter, he's the GOAT. But I think we're going to see a lot of Gabriel costumes in the future.
Isn't it kind of funny how, like, these horror movies, like, the subcultures around them also get a big jump start in different ways?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like the scream face being associated with, you know, so much of the horror, but then also in the zeitgeist of society, you know, so in mm-hmm. a bunch of different contexts. And then, yeah, like, these weird little subcultures of, like, I know it's Jigsaw, the Babadook is another one that, like, gets a weird little life outside of horror. Yeah, it's I think that's super interesting too. It's cool. It's a cool thing about horror movies that I feel like you were saying at the beginning, I think it's like they get a bad rap for, like, not, like, being, yeah, like Chris was saying at the beginning, it's like it's there's more to them than I think mm-hmm. that people give it, than just because you're scared, because you're in an emotion you hate, it's easier to be able to dismiss it, you know. But I think that there's definitely a lot to it. I think that both these directors bring a lot to it that makes the movies more enjoyable, because there's layers, because there's more depth and story and craftsmanship around it than usual. And I think it has to be in order to be good.
Yeah.
And the real way that we know that both of these directors are super iconic is because both of them have characters that were parodied in a Scary Movie.
Exactly.
I was just going to mention Scary Movie. I think that is, you know, that is important. I think Scary Movie represents pop culture in a way that there are people who have never seen any of the movies we're discussing, but they've seen Scary Movie. And I call it a reverse reference when you, like, you've never seen the original source material, but you're so familiar with the reference. I get that a lot from Family Guy. Like, I'll be out mm-hmm. in the wild and I'll, like, hear or see something and I'm like, oh, Family Guy made fun of that. I didn't know what they were talking about at the time.
Yeah.
And I think that just only shows how prolific, you know, these characters are and how part of the zeitgeist they are. And, you know, the fact that we did have so many Freddy sequels, and the fact that we've had remakes of The Last House on the Left and The Hills Have Eyes, and the fact that we have someone taking up the mantle of the Scream franchise and having it be so successful, because it really took the source material and honored it, I think, and that's mm-hmm. what people were looking for. And if it had gone too off the rails, I think it would have lost its goodwill and we wouldn't be seeing additional Scream sequels in the works.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think, like, so, you know, Wes Craven, I think he kind of breathed new life into these, like, the slasher subgenre. And kind of in that same vein, I feel like James Wan kind of revived this idea of like dark fantasy and like the haunted house, like just the haunted house formula, and just flipped it on its head, specifically with Insidious. Like, I know I said I was going to talk mostly about The Conjuring, but like, let's be real, it's all of them.
It's all of them.
Like, I just think, like Insidious in particular, like the first half of that movie is a very straightforward kind of haunted house movie, and then completely flips on its head to, like I said, this kind of dark fantasy where there's this demon who's taken this boy to a realm, to this like other side, but and the dad has to go into this weird shadow realm to go save his son from this demon. And like, I think that is just so unique and interesting. And I mean, it's kind of similar with the Conjuring universe, where they don't, I would say they toe the line of dark fantasy, but it's really kind of just like a Christian superhero genre, like movie at one point, like helmed by Ed and Lorraine Warren, like
Yeah.
using the power of Christ to compel these demons out of this family's house. And I don't know, it's so, I just rewatched The Conjuring again last night, and it's so dramatic, and it takes
Yeah.
itself, it takes the subject matter very seriously, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. So it still kind of has this like light humor kind of injected throughout, which
Yeah.
we see in Insidious and in Malignant, which is just totally an off the rails movie. But yeah, I just so I appreciate kind of the new life he's breathed into these movies, because really on its nose, if you just look at a movie like The Conjuring, like on paper, it's pretty straightforward. Family moves into a new house.
Yeah.
It's super haunted. There's a demon trying to possess the mom. Like, that sounds pretty like basic, but he does it in a way that feels new and fresh.
I love that. Yeah. And that's an interesting thing is where I was just like thinking about other qu like the way like the legacy that these two gentlemen leave in the genre. And Wes Craven very well known for subversion and breathing a new life in different ways, and James Wan too, like the way that they tell their stories and the way that they get their scares, they are different, but they each have their own kind of impact moving forward, which is I think another telltale sign of what makes excellent horror directors. What do you guys think is kind of like the biggest thing that these guys leave behind or move or leave for people who are picking up their own mantles and moving, looking to these old movies for inspiration.
Yeah, I actually think that what's really interesting to me about Wes Craven, I mentioned obviously the Scream series takes place over 3 decades, but he actually had a hit in 5 different decades, the 70s through the 2010s. And
That's longevity, man.
he was able to kind of adjust for what was popular. Nightmare on Elm Street was very much in line with things like Halloween and other movies that were coming out in the 70s. And then, in later years, it was mostly the Scream franchise, but also Red Eye, that movie with Cillian Murphy and Rachel McAdams, which is completely different from other things he's made. But it's some of the deeper cuts that really stick with me. He has a werewolf movie called Cursed that has Christina Ricci in it, and it is so lighthearted and funny. And there's a moment, a very gif-able moment, where werewolf flips someone off and says "fuck you," and it's just like so, it's like burned in my memory.
Iconic.
And I think that these kind of less popular movies of his really show that he was a horror fan, and he was speaking to his fans. Sometimes that you want a funny werewolf movie, and sometimes you want The People Under the Stairs, which came out at a time where we were not focusing people of color in a lot of stories. And it's a really interesting play on like gentrification and exploitation. And I think that that is one that I don't hear enough people talking about. It hasn't been streaming anywhere for like the last 5 years. I've been trying to rewatch this movie, and it's not available anywhere, and it's so good. And so I think that what it really comes down to is, yes, you can be part of the general populace and enjoy something that Wes Craven has done, but you can also be a really involved horror fan like me and Katie, and find these, lesser known films and find something to attach to.
For sure. And quick side note before I go into James Wan, my first date in eighth grade was to Cursed.
Oh, that's
was to go
awesome.
see Cursed.
Oh man.
Yep. That's great. But anyway, like as far as also another side note, Shudder or somebody needs to get on getting People Under the Stairs on
right?
streaming. And then this is just my little PSA to buy people should buy physical media when you can, because you don't know when the streaming service will just it'll just
hey,
go
listen.
Away and then you can't get to it.
We got a lot of CTAs in this episode, but you know, that's especially important.
If you're local Scarecrow Video, they need your support.
Yeah.
Oh yes, absolutely. They're amazing. But yes, so James Wan, kind of like the impact he's left, I would say, like on the genre, the legacy that he carries on. I mean, I mentioned it before, but you know, I can't not mention Saw, and I can't, you know, I can't understate enough like how much that changed things. Like that was a like you don't, in my opinion, movies like Hostel. Also like don't get the recognition that they get without Saw coming before. Like it really opened the door to this really just gnarly bloody era of horror in like the 2000s, which this like this feeling of like extreme horror, which is funny because if you think about the first Saw, it's really not that gory. Like I mean it's got gore in it, but not in the way that that franchise kind of went off the
Ups
rails.
The ante every
yeah they
single
really
time,
you
yeah.
know you know, and I feel like I imagine I was just telling somebody this, like I feel like being alive and a teenager during like the Saw era is the closest thing I'm ever going to get to knowing what it was like in the 80s when there was a new Friday the 13th every year, because literally every October, like their commercials started to just say like, it's Halloween, you know what time it is, time for a new Saw sequel. So that is just really exciting. But really I think like movies like Insidious, in particular, and The Conjuring, are kind of like his best work. Like that's kind of like the legacy that he's leaving, which is like taking this haunted house trope and kind of turning it on its head. And the way that he portrays like scary moments, the way that he kind of forces you to look at things, and the way like the character design for some of his villains and ghosts and stuff, they're all very, they're so scary, but they're really unique and interesting to look at. So again, you don't want to look away. And again, I'm going to bat for Malignant. I think that's gonna go down as a classic. It came out last year, so it's still a little fresh. But
I think it's
that,
still on HBO Max, and I would highly
yeah,
recommend
I would
it.
Highly recommend it. It is so goofy, and it so doesn't take itself seriously. Like, doesn't even really take the subject matter seriously in the way that I was saying The Conjuring does. Like, this is James Wan just being like, hi HBO and Warner Brothers, I've made Aquaman and a Furious 7 movie, and I've launched two very successful film franchises. Please let me just do whatever
Give
I want.
Give me one.
And
Give
they
me
were
one.
Like, okay, James Wan, you can do whatever you want. He's like, cool. So this lady had a twin that died in the womb, and it fused to the back of her brain and is evil and is now controlling her.
And also electricity somehow.
And also electricity somehow. And he throws a chair across a police station. It's just, it's so good.
It's so
just,
good.
Just watch it.
Well, and one thing while we were talking about that I really thought about with Wes Craven is, I think that, you know, the thing about horror and the legacy of horror and the reason that people like horror is that it's playing on whatever anxieties are present at that time. You know, I was just reading an article about how the new horror trope is like basically women not being believed. And you'll see it now that I've said it. I just watched Smile, women not being believed. The Invisible Man, women not being believed. Like it's so prevalent in the horror that's come out in just the last couple of years. And it's not like all those people are getting together and talking about it. It's because women in real life are not being believed, and it's stressful. And then we write stories about it. So
yeah.
I think that that is something that is so fascinating to me about Wes Craven's legacy. And, you know, like I said, working over the course of 50 years to create some of the most iconic films. But even if you distill it down to the Scream franchise, every movie has a different, you know, motive for the ghost face. And they are so tied to the era that they're in. And I think that's why 5 was successful even without Wes Craven, is because the fans who created it kind of latched onto that idea. In the first one, you know, it's like a broken home situation. And then in the second one, it's revenge. And in the third one, it's about like fame and not feeling like you're being respected by people in the same way. And then in the fourth one, it just escalates and escalates. And it all kind of comes back to this idea that people just want attention. And I think it's just so interesting that, you know, we see these horror tropes, and I'm curious, Katie, what you think, like the anxieties that James Wan is playing on, because they are so prevalent and they're so iconic at this very moment, and there's clearly something that people are latching onto there.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess it's a couple of things, because he also kind of has, you know, had key installments like in sort of, I mean, not that far apart from each other, but kind of in different eras. Like I think when Saw came out, you know, I keep talking about this shift, and I think, I don't know, I mean, maybe it's cliche, but you know, it's post 9/11. Mm-hmm. Everything feels very different. I think a lot of people who were feeling safe and secure in life maybe stopped feeling that as much. There was a lot of distrust coming from, you know, just the general public towards people in power. There was a lot more violence seen in the news, just because of, you know, seeing scenes from the war and from overseas, and just from things happening here just becoming more, you know, sensationalized and stuff. So I feel like, and maybe a film scholar will come and tell me otherwise, but I feel like Saw is kind of a reflection of that in a lot of ways. And I think with Insidious in particular, there's kind of this, you know, like what was that, 2010? I mean, that there's also kind of, I feel like that's the first kind of drops of this feeling of like existential dread in some mm-hmm. ways that I feel like has really, really amped up, especially in the last few years, which I'd love to talk more about that in the post show too. But I think, like, because again, not only is it a haunted house movie, but it's not that straightforward. And there's this kind of like powerlessness, I guess, that comes with realizing that the world and just existence in general is so much bigger than you can even imagine, to the point that there's an entire world overlaid over ours that we can't see. There's a whole realm, like a shadow right. realm in Insidious. And so I think like that kind of paranoia kind of reflects, you know, a lot of what people were feeling then and are still feeling now.
Totally.
Yeah. I think that there's definitely what's great about this genre and what's great about these two gentlemen and what they're able to bring to it is putting a very, you know, you can make things very outlandish to be scary, but to make things real and scary is hard. And then also give you like a little bit of catharsis at the end sometimes. But a little bit of a way to kind of identify yourself in these stories is another great thing that both of these directors do. In the way that they tell their story. So I think that that's, shout out to the writers and all the people who make these movies happen. But I think the vision that these two people bring definitely shaped the genre. I can already tell it's going to be a juicy post show. it's going to be great.
Yeah.
So thank you, Casey. Thank you, Katie. You guys, I knew you're going to crush it. I knew this episode was going to be good. And I love this. But you know what? Judge Hamburg, you have the hard job right now. You gotta let us know. Who do you think is the best horror director?
Yeah, this was really hard. Casey and Katie, you both gave really good arguments, and I'm not bullshitting you because I've actually never seen a James Wan movie. But I still think that, like, and I haven't seen a lot of Wes Craven's movies, to be perfectly honest, but you both made really compelling arguments. Like, I think if that wasn't true, then I wouldn't be struggling, right? Because I don't have the movies to compare these to. But I'm going to have to go with Wes Craven. And honestly, like, in 10 or 20 years, like, I could reverse that opinion if I were asked again, because I just feel like Juan needs more time for us to know, like, what exactly his legacy is going to be, how he is going to influence the genre moving forward. I mean, just Craven has the advantage of, like, this decades-long career, and, like, having, like, a hand in, like, sort of different aspects of horror, which I realize James Wan is also, like, going into himself, which is really, really cool to hear. But yeah, I think just because Craven was involved for so long and was so influential on, like, so many other directors, and that's just, like, a factor of time
for sure.
At this point. So yeah, like, at this in this year of 2022, I still think that Craven has a big footprint. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, things are changing, but I think that the work that he did has not been rendered irrelevant.
Yeah.
And so, just, like, you know, for grandmaster status, I'm going to go with Wes Craven.
Casey Rom.
Yay.
Craven wears the crown. I fully believe that. It was, yeah, you both came in with just some great,
absolutely
great arguments. Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's the new generation of, like, Jordan Peele, Ari Aster, like, there's so many people making these some incredible stuff. The guy who did there's there are many. Yeah. You can look it up. There's a bunch of directors. Look it up. It's gonna be great. Go into it. It's spooky season, mm-hmm. So now more than ever there's plenty of spooks to get you in the mood for horror, and just to understand, like, you know, what horror can bring, because I feel like, again, this is such an underrated genre, and it obviously is hard for people to get into it. I understand fear is very real, and, you know, it's hard to face this, like, be in that space for whatever, but for us horror aficionados, you know, it's really fun. And both of these gentlemen have made some incredible movies, and thanks so much for bringing it to life with us today.
Yeah.
We are definitely going to get more into it in the post show. So thank you both. So big shout out. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
It's hard having the gavel. It's hard.
You know? But it's, I really appreciate having to make a tough choice.
as you do, as we, you know, as is often presented in these movies.
Yep.
Thank you, Casey, Katie. I am Kwesi Phillips. Thank you for everyone listening. Please tune in for our next episode. For more information about our extra content, our Patreon for our extended plays, hot takes, drink-alongs, this marathon that we just did, any extra 24 Flames goodies, you can follow us on social media at 24 Flames Pod and give us a rating on any platform you get your podcasts. Partyfish Media is produced by me, Robert Bohorquez, and Will Paulson. Our show music was created by Rob Joins and Will Paulson. You can check out our website at partyfish.media. That is partyfish.media. To follow us and all the great podcasts on our platform, you can go to Partyfish Media on social media to find out more. Big thank you to everybody. Get your spooks in. It's spooky season. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
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 Fish Media. Party Fish Media acknowledges that it operates and records on Indigenous Duwamish and Puget Sound Coast Salish land that is still home to the Duwamish tribe. This land is stolen in violation of the Point Elliott Treaty of 1855. We are committed to uplifting the name of these lands and community members from these nations who reside alongside us. For more information on this land, its people, or ways you can help, visit duwamishtribe.org or realrentduwamish.org.